Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, Joy on Paper today, an author whose debut middle grade novel has already made a great impact, and I am so proud to have her on the program. Danielle Clayton is not just an author, she is also the CEO of a nonprofit group called We Need Diverse Books. This is exactly the type of organization that I had been looking for from the time that I started Joy on Paper 7 years ago. So I'm so happy to welcome Danielle Clayton to Joy on Paper. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is wonderful. And of course, you are such a talented author. And the new book, I'm always excited for middle grade books because I know I'm already planning for my summer program. I want to really get kids out there and reading. I'm going to be giving away a lot of books. I'm going to have some children here in the studio to talk about the authors that they love. So it's always exciting for me to be around children and to be able to help promote books. So tell us about this new book, The Marvelers.
Yes, I'm so excited. The Marvelers is the future of magic school. It is set in our world, but in our world, there are people called the Marvelers who have left the non-magical world and they live above in the skies. They have three cities and a school, and they believe that every magical person is born with a light inside of them. That is their marvel, something that's marvelous about them. And then there's this other group called the Conjurers, and they still live down with the non-magical people. They get to visit the Marveler cities and everything, but they can't come to the same school because their magic is deemed different and strange. And so this story follows the first Conjure student ever to be allowed into the Arcanum Institute, and it's her adventures and how she tries to come into this new community when there's so much tension between the two magical groups.
Well, it is a beautiful book. Obviously, the publishers love you for many reasons because you are in the publishing world. But boy, oh boy, they pulled out all the stops with the design of the cover, the design of the book, the end plates. I love it. I was just enthralled. When you open the book, right here on the end place, you have this wonderful illustration. It must have just blown you away when they did this.
Absolutely. They made it into a book that I would have devoured as a kid. It's both beautiful, and there are hidden documents and maps. There's a second map inside the book as well. And so many things for a young reader to hunt and find. So it really feels like an experience, not just a regular book. Like, you feel immersed because of all the art inside of the book and the design.
Well, that's what I love when publishers treat kids to really top quality books, because I think it's important that they have this in their hands. They feel the lovely paper. They see these beautiful illustrations. And as you said, all these little hidden things that are along the way. I think just the production value alone is great. And then, well, now we'll talk about your writing, because wow, you are an amazing writer.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
Of course, this is your first middle grade, right? But you are already a New York Times bestselling author. So you sort of approach this with a lot of experience behind you. But you had a lot of work here to do to really do some world building.
I definitely did. I write for young adults. I write for teenagers. They're often grumpy and fussy and frustrated and angsty. And I decided to write for younger kids, for upper elementary and middle school this time around, because I'm also, by training, a middle school and elementary school librarian. So this book is really for my students. I was inspired by them to give them a universe where to feel seen. And I had to build a world where all of my students I taught in New York City could have a place to call home, because New Yorkers are from all over the world and have heritages from all over the place. And so I wanted to make sure that this world encompassed them, everyone. So I had to world build.
Well, you did. You did. I was wondering, how did you do this? Did you use a Scrivener for this?
No, I don't trust Scrivener. I mean, I use Scrivener for some things, but I am old-fashioned. I actually handwrite many of my first drafts, and then I use, you know, my computer, but I also use an instrument called a free write.
Well, I am so glad that you say that you still write things by hand, because, you know, sometimes I will, well, I used to until the pandemic, I used to go around and talk to a lot of groups of children about books, and I would talk about writing, and sometimes a kid would say to me, well, when I get a computer, a really good computer, I'll write, I'm going to get a Mac computer, then I'll be able to, I said, no, no. I said, you know, I can tell you for thousands of years, you know, writers didn't need anything. All you need is a piece of paper and a pencil and let it flow. Just write it all out. And later on, you can get it on a computer. But just write like crazy.
Exactly. And I believe that writing by hand for me helps me connect with the story, because I have to slow down. I have to think really deeply. And so all you need is pen and paper or pencil and paper and your imagination to make a story. So I don't want to hear those excuses from the kids saying, I can't write, I don't have a computer.
Oh, that's great. That's a librarian talk. You know, for me, a librarian, when I came upon my first librarian, I thought she was a goddess. And we'll never forget it. I was just starting third grade. We moved to Detroit from the country. We'd been living out in a farm, and we moved to Detroit, and it was my first library. And I walked in, and of course, I was in awe. In Detroit, one of these old, beautiful buildings, all marble and oak and everything so gorgeous, and a children's reading room. And there was a librarian standing there, and she was wearing a shirtwaist dress. And I looked at her, and I thought she was a goddess. Really, I thought she came down from heaven just to give me this wonderful joy of books.
I love that. Librarians, to me, are the lighthouses for young people. They are the reminders that they're in this the rough waters that is this human experience as we're growing up, that they're there. You know, they are to bring you the books that you need to survive and to thrive. And so I love being a librarian. I love working with young people. My librarian made my imagination. So without librarians, I don't know where I'd be.
Well, me too, because it changed my life. And I remember the day I walked in, I was so scared because, you know, having lived, you know, on a farm, you come to the city anyway, everything's scary. But to be in this room, this magnificent room with marble floors and oak bookshelves all around the room, I said very softly, where should I start? And she said, well, it's in alphabetical order. And I wasn't even sure what alphabetical order meant. But she pointed, and I literally started at A, and I went around over the next, 2 years it took me to go around all the way to Z. And I got stuck for a long time there on Alcott. And so there I got really stuck. And then when I got to Austin, that was where I stopped for a long time. And so, you know, it's just wonderful what a library can do for a kid.
For sure. And when you feel reflected on the shelves and you can go in and get book after book after book that reflects your experience, that's the goal for me. That's why I'm a writer. I want to make sure that no kid is left behind, that they all get to walk in and see as many reflections of themselves as they want and windows into other people's experiences and other people's magic and mischief. So the library is my favorite place in the world.
I agree. As a matter of fact, I always had this hope that somehow I would save the mayor of Detroit's life. He would be, you know, almost hit by a bus or something, and I'd save his life, and then the only reward I would want would be a key to the library.
Exactly. Unlimited access.
That's it. It's pretty thrilling, isn't it, for you now to be able to walk in and see your books on the shelf, and particularly this beautiful book.
It's awkward and strange and a dream. It's everything. It's everything I wanted to do. And I'm just hoping that, you know, kids find the books and feel seen and heard and come to call it home.
Well, I think that you are able to capture such a clear vision for the reader that you really take them into the story. As I was reading it, I was thinking so many things about how an author has this wonderful ability to take a reader on this journey if they paint the picture for them, if they, with words, just take the reader into the story and just take us and get us lost in there that we don't want to come out for a long time.
Absolutely. That's the goal. It's the dream, is to build an imagination and help build other people's imaginations and give them the tools they need to imagine and to see. That's the best part of reading.
It is. For example, even now, I can close my eyes and I can imagine Ursa Minor Lounge.
Yeah,
you know, you build something like that for the reader, and it stays there forever.
I love that, right? And when you really ignite a passion in a kid, especially, it becomes part of their memories. I can remember some of the first books that I read, and I'm like, oh, wow, I remember that first feeling of the Hobbit hole, right? And going into that cozy, you know, Tolkien's cozy little Hobbit hole.
Now, when you came out with the idea for this book, what was the genesis? How did it come about?
Well, at first, people told me I couldn't do it. They said, how are you going to write a magic school book when there's Harry Potter? Nobody wants another magic school book but that. And I took it as a challenge. I said, well, I love Harry, and I love that universe. However, I don't feel seen by that universe. And as much as I can enjoy it and participate, there aren't characters who are main characters that look like me. And so I decided to write a space where every kid can find themselves in this universe, and it's organically there. It's not retconned. And so when I set out to do it, it was literally an endeavor of, like, people said I couldn't do it. And my mother would say, whenever anyone says no to you, you're like, I can prove you incorrect. Whenever someone says you can't do something. So I was very much inspired by my own students, but also by trying to create a universe where they would feel seen and heard.
Well, I think it's brilliant what you've done here. For me, boy, oh boy, you did it. And you created something unique, something inspiring. I think it's very inspiring for children. And there's just little areas that I would stop and I would marvel at your writing. I loved, for example, again, we're back in the lounge of Ursa Minor, and where she says, I'm a paragon of taste with a tea marvel, dearies. British, specifically. But the pot can brew you any kind you like in an instant. And, you know, I lived in England for a long time, and so I just got such a kick out of just that line alone. I thought, that's so clever. That's so smart. You just put me right there with this character, with the people, with the kids in the lounge. I think it's just wonderful writing.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yes, and I lived in England too, and I love tea, and I wanted to do a little shout out to my British readers there. And, you know, little Easter eggs there about places I've lived and people I've, you know, interacted with and fans that I adore. So,
well, I noticed that. I didn't know that you had lived in England like I did. I went to England because of Jane Austen. At the age of 11, I decided that I was going to move to England to live near where Jane was born. And by the time I was 21, I had saved $25,000 American dollars. I worked three jobs all the way through school. And I went to England and I bought a cottage in Sonning near Henley.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, a 400-year-old cottage.
That's so amazing.
So I'd be near where Jane was born. So you also lived in England.
I did. I studied abroad there when I was in college. And I usually go for 2 to 3 months out of every year. Pre-pandemic.
I know.
And it's just like a second home to me. I love it so very much.
Oh, so do I. I was actually planning to go, my son was going to go to Cambridge, but of course everything was canceled because of the pandemic, and so I didn't get to go, but oh, to go back, to go to Harrods, Fortnum & Mason's, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
I think you're younger, so was the British Museum reading room open, or was it already closed by the time you got there?
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it was probably closed.
Before the pandemic, I'm like.
Yeah.
I was there in, actually, 2004.
Yeah, it would have been closed. They closed it down. The reading room was where I used to spend hundreds of hours doing research. Going to England, I think, that's what I picked up on. I had no idea that you studied in England, but I picked up on all these little nuances that you have in the book, which I think just added to my joy.
I love that. And that's what I want for readers. I really want there to feel like there's so much more to discover in a reread, right? Because I want to create, I think middle grade books have to stand up for rereads because kids fall in love and they want to reread their favorite book.
Oh, that's true. They really do.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
They reread it doubly clearly until it falls apart. And so this is why you have to leave those Easter eggs for that kid to discover upon their second read.
As a librarian, you know that. That's so important. And
yeah.
I know that the kids, I'm sure, are just marveling at the marvels because it is a great, the whole premise, how you started off, the idea of it is great. And I agree that there's always, you know, there's always room for another great book.
I love that. Thank you for saying it because, you know, sometimes the world will make you feel like there isn't.
Oh, I know. I know. And I want to talk a little bit about this whole idea of we need diverse books, because this is something, when I first started this program, I didn't understand the whole concept of publishing. So I didn't realize sort of that there wasn't the diversification that I expected. So I was so happy. All of the diverse books that I'm getting nowadays, even in the 7 years since I started this program, I'm getting such a wonderful wide range of books. And it really thrills me because I'm interested in cultures from around the world. And so that I'm now getting these books and that the kids can see themselves as characters in these books, I think is wonderful.
I'm so glad to start. Yes, so I help run an organization called We Need Diverse Books. And we launched in 2014 because we were concerned and upset that the books on the shelves didn't reflect all readers. And so we set out to make sure to help with many different programs to ensure that every kid can walk into their classroom, walk into a bookstore, walk into their library and see themselves reflected back, and also see windows into other people's experiences, and to know that they can be the hero of a story. And we work with parents, teachers, educators, librarians, up-and-coming writers, and publishers themselves to help get at that goal.
Well, now, of course, with this book, this is the first of the series, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So far?
I'm sure you're on the second book already?
Yes.
I'm
on the second book already.
And then you have the fun of working with everybody involved in the publication of the book, and including, they really got some great illustrators for you. I love the drawings. I love this one at the end. It's called Wanted. I love that. That's so beautiful. And of course, the nice thing, I always like to see the acknowledgments that people write, because there is so much that goes into writing a book, and you really, sometimes people don't appreciate what an author has to do. Now, it's not just finishing the book, right? A lot of the work starts after you finish writing the book.
Absolutely. It's a long journey. It's a long, long journey to get a book from start to finish, and it takes a village and a team. And I got really lucky that Macmillan Publishing has just put so much love. They made the book look beautiful. They've gotten it out to great people like yourself. And now I get to see how the readers feel, and the readers get to call it their own now. But yes, the acknowledgments are full of people who helped me get where I am, helped me with my meltdowns, helped the book look beautiful, helped us get to this day.
Well, it's an exciting thing to happen to an author, to come out with an idea and then to go through this whole process and finally to be there. And nowadays, isn't it wonderful? You can actually have real book signings with real people.
Yes. It is still feels a little stressful, but yes, we're coming back.
It's
good.
It's nice. And I'm sure the kids get so excited to meet you, because a great writer really can inspire children in so many ways, to follow their dreams, to believe in themselves, to have hope.
Yes, to have hope, and to know that everything's going to be okay.
Exactly. And that's what you've done with this book. I think it's beautiful. As you said, just blessed with a wonderful publisher. They always do a great job. But with this one, with all the little things that they've added to it, the headings, the illustrations, they've really gone whole hog with you and given you the very top of the line book.
They have. They've made it feel like an experience, not just reading a book. So you really feel like you are having an experience, that you're falling into a world. All of the details matter. You know, there are Easter eggs everywhere. So I feel like it can be a treat for the right reader.
It is. And I know that, for example, I went back, I don't know why, three times I think I went back to the level one trainee timetable. Somehow I like to imagine myself at level, you know, I'm ready to go. I want to be a trainee. I just love that. I thought it's just so clever and I love it. I looked at it and I want to become a trainee because it's a book that really calls the reader in, jump in this book and have fun and go with it. And you've done a beautiful job. So I'm very, very happy that, you know, you came on Joy on Paper. What does your family think? They must be pretty thrilled.
Yes, yes. My parents are like, wow, you did it. You're doing it, you know, because I kept talking about it. They saw me working so hard. And so I think them seeing it come to fruition is exciting, especially my dad, because he's a bookworm and he loves books.
Well, they have to be very, very proud of you. And I'm very proud that you are on Joy on Paper today, because I think this is the beginning of a great long-running series that kids will enjoy, that will bring a lot of happiness to them. And as I said, that hope that all kids need, that things can be good, things can work out. And in your case, you have proven that by hard work and by sticking to it, you've become a major, major author and somebody that can now really shine a light on diversity and also just shine a light on just having plain old fun reading a book.
Exactly. And thank you so much for having me.
Let's just give your webpage, social media. Where can people find you?
Sure. You can find me on all social media at Brown Bookworm. And if you're interested in learning more about The Marvelers, you can head over to themarvelersseries.com and get lots of extra content and exciting things in the coming weeks.
Okay, and so it's MarvelousSeries.com, TheMarvelousSeries.com, and Danielle, I love your name, the spelling of your name. Most people can't imagine it unless I spell it out, so I'm going to spell it Donielle, Danielle Clayton, and that is a name that is going to be very famous, and I love the name Danielle. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you so much. I'll tell my dad, who I always thought was weird for naming me this.
Well, no, I think he, you know, it's distinctive. I don't think there are many Danielles, and you will certainly be, once people see it, they'll never forget it. And I think it goes along with you. You're beautiful, and somehow it suits you just perfectly.
I appreciate it very much.
Okay, well, a special hello to your parents, because I know that they are very, very proud of you right now with all of this wonderful publicity you're getting for The Marvelers, because you must have been a pretty marvelous kid.
Yeah, I was not too bad. A little bit of a sourpuss, but stayed out of trouble.
Okay, well, it was great talking to you, and you'll be back as soon as you finish editing this. You know, get hopping. Girl, I'm sure that they want you to have the next book released soon.
Yes, time to get going.
That's it. They don't want too much time between the books, because you want to roll them up. And the kids, that's the wonderful thing about kids. When they want a book, they want a book. So,
thank you.
Okay, so I'll have you back on Joy on Paper soon, okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Danielle Clayton. Donielle. That's a beautiful name. Danielle. Okay. We'll be back. No.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call in from somebody from National Geographic. And as everybody knows, I love National Geographic books, and so I'm expecting that call in a few minutes, and it's going to be exciting because, oh boy, it's coming to summertime, and everybody wants to think about a vacation, a vacation away from at least away from their house, because I think after all of this pandemic-y time, people are ready to get out there and get rolling, and maybe not too far, because gas is expensive. But my next author has a solution for you, because with National Geographic, there are always, always ideas of about where you can go. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper somebody who knows about traveling, Stephanie Pearson. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, this is wonderful. We're going to be talking today about this great book, 100 Great American Parks. And you know, as I was telling my listeners, I know so many of them just need a vacation. So yeah. Tell us where they can go. And the nice thing about it is there are parks all over the country.
Oh, my gosh. That is such a wow. There are parks all over the country. And that was one of the greatest joys of working on this book, was to realize just how diverse and beautiful our country is. In the book, there are 63 national parks, but there's also 37 other parks, some state parks, some city parks, some actually wilderness areas, which aren't really an official park designation, but I wanted to put in the whole smattering of what kinds of public lands we have in the United States to enjoy.
So even if you know, the costs of petrol are, you know, it's high. I know that it's going to be difficult for a lot of people to do traveling, you know, across the country like we love to do. But There's always really something not too far away. It still gives you that opportunity to get away from the house, because too many people have spent too many hours in the house. and get some fresh air and get out there and just be reinvigorated by nature.
Absolutely. And yeah, the park, the way the park, or the way the book is structured is that it's broken into regions of the country. And I included a park in every state and every territory. And so I really did want to, you know, not make this so Western-centric or Alaska-centric. I mean, there's definitely those, you know, bucket list type parks in the book. But there are also parks that are, you know, within range of a wide population of people, you know, like on the East Coast and other places.
And now this is not just a coffee table book. It's, you know, it has all of these gorgeous photographs, 400 pages of photographs, but the information that you provide, it's done so beautifully. Everything is so easy to follow. All of the details of the parks, what's available, the things to see, all of this is just laid out there for people and will really, I think, enhance their visits to the parks.
Well, thank you for saying that it's more than a coffee table book. I appreciate that. You know, it is National Geographic, and the photos are absolutely gorgeous. But I really did want to make it more than just a guidebook, you know, like hike 5 miles to this viewpoint to see this particular thing. I really wanted to include the culture and the history and, you know, why some of these parks are national parks or national historic sites. And So I delved into the history in some places or maybe the science in other places. You know, Big Bend National Park is an incredible place because it's where three mountain range building episodes happen. So the Appalachians, the Rocky Mountains, and the Basin and Range all converge there. And so it's, like, geologically an incredible place. Geologists have been studying it for decades.
Well, was this type of information that... You know, although I've been to many of the national parks, I loved all that additional information you gave and insights into the area and into the parks that really I found so, you know, really so valuable. I know that I'm not going to be able to visit a lot of the parks this summer, but when I do, I will, you know, really appreciate having this information. And now as I look back and really, right now I'm sort of in the process of going through all my photographs and putting them together, I think this book is just going to help me so much.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that.
Well, it is a jumping off point because, you know, when you've been to a lot of parks and you know, now you have thousands of photographs to scan in, I am looking at it from that point of view. I'm trying to, you know, break it down into the places that we visited. I was a homeschool mom, so we did a lot of traveling. Deliberately, you know, would find locations and we would go to that area to learn about the history of a state or of a place. Or in this case, as you say, the scientific information in an area. So you've done a wonderful job with this book.
Well, thank you. I wish I had been your kid. That sounds like a great way to learn about the U.S.
Oh, yeah. We went to every Civil War battle site. We went to every Revolutionary battle site. We went to all of the places out west, you know, that were part of our great history. So, this is why I think this book is really valuable to people as a guide and just as also a reminder for those of who have been to these places.
Yeah.
Now, when you, of course, you, I can't even ask you what's your favorite, but because I'm sure that there are so many that you love, and I know that I love, but tell us, what ones do you want to sort of, off the top of your head, tell people about that they might find really intriguing?
Well, there are a couple that I've been to. One park that I spent a lot of time in last summer because I'm doing a bigger story on it is the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. And it's not a national park, and it's in the southern
sort of the southernmost part of Lake Superior, and it's these islands that it's a 22 island archipelago off of northwestern Wisconsin, and it's hard to get to because it's in the middle of Lake Superior, but there is so much history. These islands are considered wilderness, but over the course of the development of this part of the country, there was a lot of, there were Norwegian immigrant fishermen who came, and so they settled, and so there are, you know, old fishing cabins out there. And then there's a native, the Ojibwe, believe that Madeline Island, which is near the park but not part of the park, is sort of the center of their universe. And so there's Ojibwe, Anishinaabe history there. And so there are these layers and layers and layers of history in this park that is very unvisited because it's very difficult to get to, and only 12 miles of it is on the mainland. So you really have to commit to going to this park. But there are many others, too, across the country. One place that I haven't been to, it's a newer park that I really want to see, is the Harriet Tubman. She's actually got two parks or sites devoted to her in the park system, and one of them is new, and it's in Maryland. And it tells the story. It's the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad National Historical Park. And it really tells the story of how she freed herself, and then she went back to subsequently lead 70 more enslaved peoples to freedom. But it's where she lived, and it's in these marshlands of Maryland, and it's where she worked. And you know, there's this historic trail that you can take that, you know, along the way there's this store where she was hit in the head by a brick because this slave owner was trying to hit a slave who was trying to escape, and she was in the way. And so she suffered epileptic seizures her whole life. And those are the kinds of details in these parks that, you know, I didn't learn about that in my American history class. And, you know, there are just so many historical parks devoted to important times and people of our history.
Well, it was, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, the Apostle Islands, because I was born on Lake Superior. I'm from Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And so I'm very familiar with them. As a matter of fact, my first boyfriend at the age of 5 was was an Ojibwe from the Ojibwe tribe, and I was madly in love with him when I was 5 years old, because you know, that's the area where the Ojibwe live. But I was so happy that you mentioned that one, because that's one that I love, and it is really a hidden gem for people. It's just a wonderful place.
Yes, it is. That's funny. Have you been back there since?
Oh, not in the recent years, but yes, I've been up. Yeah, I go up as much often as I can, and because, well, you know, it's home. It's always home. You can take a girl out of the, you know, I'm a youper, So I, if you've been in the Upper Peninsula, you probably had a pasty, and so I just love it, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, because I think it is actually a beautiful place for people to visit.
Yeah.
Now, when you were, you know, going through all of these places and selecting, as you said, it was nice that you did each state and found something in each state. Let's talk for a minute. I'm here in Florida. What about Florida?
Well, one of the parks in Florida that fascinated me the most was Biscayne Bay National Park. It's off the coast of Miami, and it's a really populated area, but it's got actually more species in it than Yellowstone because of all of the underwater life in it, which I found to be fascinating. But in addition to that, it's history. You know, it's got pirate history. It's got smuggling history. You know, there was a point at which one of the keys out there, they built a road because they wanted to develop the property, and then that was shut down.
And so this particular park has a really interesting portion of American history that I wasn't very familiar with, and I also am fascinated by the underwater wildlife that exists there. So if you have access to a boat, that seems like an amazing place. And of course, the Everglades. I'd love to take a kayak through the Everglades, so many beautiful places.
Now, we have to mention something that's very important here, is who did the introduction for the book?
Well, Garth Brooks did the introduction to the book. He's best known as an iconic American musician, but he's also someone who's traveled quite extensively across the country. And he wrote a really really beautiful foreword to this book, just talking about how, you know, he says, in every state, city, and town, at every diner, motel, and truck stop, one thing is clear: the story of America lives in the land. The American land is as diverse as its people, and you know, he probably knows that better than anyone.
Well, I thought it was a lovely foreword that he did, and it really encompasses all of the things that we think about of traveling across America and discovering all these wonderful places. And something very important is going to be happening with Garth Brooks and with this entire story about America's national parks.
Yeah, he is hosting, he's actually narrating a series, America's National Parks by National Geographic, and that is a series that will come out later this summer, and I think it will include 10 of the parks that are included in this book. They will be all national parks, and so that's sort of an expanded companion to this book.
Well, that's an exciting development, definitely, because I think that having him talking about the national parks again, he has influence, and I think he will encourage people to get out there and travel and visit the parks.
Absolutely, and I hope he encourages them to, you know, do it in a respectful and you know, way that is good for the parks as well.
Well, that is, of course, I think. As I said, I was a homeschool mom, and we were also in scouting, and we learned the importance of taking care of the parks, making sure that we never left anything behind, that we always made it as perfect as possible when we left a park.
Yeah, that's essential. And just, you know, doing some research before you go to know what to expect in the park, and, you know, also being mindful of the wildlife and the other people in the park. And I think that that's becoming more evident as more people, parks have, in 2021, 297.1 million people visited national parks, which is quite an increase over 2020. It's 60 million more than in 2020, which was, of course, a COVID year. But, yeah, I think people are becoming more aware of the impact they have, and parks are becoming more aware of how to manage that, which is a really important thing.
Well, of course, you are yourself a great traveler. Let's take a minute to explain to people, not only are you, of course, are a National Geographic writer, but you've also had articles in Oprah magazine and in all sorts of wonderful places, bicycling and traveling. And but you are yourself a big traveler. And tell us about Mount Everest.
Well, that was back in 2010, which is, oh my gosh, now that's 12 years ago. So I went to Mount Everest. I was a contributing editor to Outside Magazine. I worked on the staff of Outside Magazine for a number of years. And after I started doing more writing, I was asked by Hanesbrands Corporation to go to Mount Everest because they had sponsored a contest for a high school student in North Carolina. Whoever won the contest got to climb to Mount Everest Base Camp with a Canadian climber who was then going to summit Mount Everest. And so
my job was to cover sort of both expeditions. And so I climbed up to Mount Everest with this high school girl who won the trip and her mother. And then I spent 3 or 4 weeks up at Mount Everest Base Camp as Jamie Clark, the mountaineer, summited Mount Everest. And luckily, he was safe and, you know, there were no disasters. But I spent about a month up at Everest Base Camp, and I wasn't allowed to go farther because I wasn't on the climbing permit, and they have very strict laws about that. So I, you know, couldn't go much further than the Khumbu Icefall, which was fine with me. But it's a fascinating place, and it's really a world, like a little global village at the base of Mount Everest.
Well, that was a very exciting assignment.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, amazing. It's amazing to think about it. And then, of course, you got to go to Tibet, and right? You went to, went and met with the Buddhist scholar?
Yeah, he was, his name is Robert Thurman, and he's actually the actor Uma Thurman's father. And he's a Buddhist scholar who spent a lot of time with the Dalai Lama. And so there was a trip to Bhutan, which is, quote, the world's, you know, gross national happiness is what their currency is. I mean, they don't care so much about domestic national product. They just want all their citizens to be happy, or, you know, that's sort of how they present it. So I went over there to study the country as well as to study with this Buddhist scholar, Robert Thurman, to study Buddhism.
Wow, that's exciting.
It was.
Wow.
Great trip.
Well, of course, anybody who works for National Geographic is a happy camper in so many ways, because you get to work for one of the greatest companies for over 100 years. National Geographic has been around helping to preserve the planet, helping to encourage people to appreciate what's around them and to appreciate the world. And of course, now with this book, to appreciate the 100 great American parks. And I think you've done a great job with this book. As I said, it's such an informative book. It really, I love the layout of this book. And it's 400 pages of absolutely gorgeous photography and a wonderful, wonderful, we have Father's Day coming up, and I know that every father would love this, and they'll probably start planning where they're going to take the family, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So again, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Stephanie Pearson, I think you're incredible, but then all of you people who work for National Geographic are incredible, because You love nature, and you love making people happy and finding ways to encourage us to get out there and enjoy the world.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I see that you read 10,000 books, so that's quite a compliment.
Well, and the reason is I started my life with National Geographic magazines. As I said, I was born, you know, just off of Lake Superior. We had long winters, and we got those magazines. They were my lifeline. And because of those magazines, that's why I traveled the world. I started with those magazines, and I've been traveling ever since, thanks to National Geographic.
Wow.
So I owe National Geographic a lot, and that's why I love to have you, all of you authors and all of the photographers, like Dan Buettner's been on, and Joe Gerst and everybody has been on, because I love the work that you're doing and protecting the planet, protecting animals, and just encouraging everyone to have fun.
Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and National Geographic Books website. Go there to National Geographic Books website. Wonderful, wonderful site. And for all of the kids out there, make sure you do Nat Geo Kids. I love that site. I go to it almost every other day. I just go there and look because they always have something new, some new animal that I didn't know about, some new place that I've never been to. And it's wonderful. If you have a kid in your family, you must go to the Nat Geo Kids website. It's one of the best websites on the internet. And again, of course, this book is available wherever books are sold, but you can get it right from their website, and it's called 100 Great American Parks. And as she said, every state, there's a places in every state, because probably you're not going to be driving a heck of a lot this year, not with the petrol prices the way they are, or gas prices. I keep saying petrol, and the other day I tell the guy, at Publix, I go to Publix and I say, put it in the boot. And he's looking at me and he said, doesn't know what I'm talking about. And I said, no, put it in the boot. And it took me a minute before I realized the kid didn't know what a boot was. That's what happened when you live so long in England like I did. So anyway, but again, this is a wonderful book for Father's Day. Father's Day is coming up, people, and it's a wonderful opportunity to give a book that not only fathers will love, but the entire family will love, and they'll sit around and read this book like I did when I was a kid, reading National Geographic magazines and thinking about all the places I wanted to visit. And you can do that now with this wonderful book, 400 pages. And the prices for National Geographic books are so reasonable, it's incredible. I don't know how they do it, but probably quantity. they publish a lot of books, but very, very good prices and a perfect gift. Okay, well, it's the time has went quickly today. I just want to say to everybody, remember, you know what I'm always telling you this thing, and I'm glad that I get emails from you saying that you are listening, because one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. Book number 12 of her Witch City Mysteries just came out on April 26th. You should go get it, because I believe that one day Carol J. Perry is going to get a series of maybe streaming video series right there, because she has a wonderful storyline and I love her characters in Witch City Mysteries. So get that book number 12. It's called Till Death, and it's a wonderful book. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. I appreciate you. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I really should have been a general. Oh my goodness. We wouldn't be in this mess today if I had been a general. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye, everybody.